to Elevating Pikes Peak Women, a podcast production of Pikes Peak Women. I'm your host, Mary Lou Makepeace, and this podcast will be bringing you content relevant to the women of the Pikes Peak region in order to help them get engaged, get empowered, and make a difference in our community. Pikes Peak Women was established in 2011 in response to a need to address critical issues involving women, issues like pay equity, healthcare reform, women's rights, and social equity. Pikes Peak Women also provides forums where women can learn how to engage, become politically active, join local boards, take leadership positions, and run for office. We do this as an independent, nonpartisan organization in collaboration with other organizations whose missions support and strengthen ours. So let's dive right in.
Hello, I am Beth Hall Rolstad, and I am your guest host today of Elevating Pikes Peak Women, the podcast for Pikes Peak Women. I am thrilled to be here. As you may know, I am the CEO of Homeward Pikes Peak, but I've been a longtime member of Pikes Peak Women, and I'm happy to be here today because we're talking about a topic dear to my heart, which is housing in our community. I'm pleased today to be sitting across from Mary Stenger, who is the CEO of Partners in Housing and has been in that role for, gosh, nearly 11 years, but you've been with the organization for a long time, almost 30 years since Partners in Housing was formed. It's great to have Mary here. She has so much knowledge. The mission of Partners in Housing is to provide transitional housing and supportive services to families experiencing homelessness or at imminent risk of becoming homeless, with the goal of achieving self-sufficiency. Mary also serves on the board of the Pikes Peak Housing Network, Housing Colorado, and the Impact Development Fund. And I'm sure she does a lot more. Thank you for all your work on this issue. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me today, Beth.
Yeah, great. Well, we're going to talk a lot about the efforts that Partners does in the community, but also two initiatives that you helped create to support families and individuals who live with low incomes in our community. Is there anything else that you want to bring up that I may not know?
No, I think that's a great start, Beth.
Okay. Awesome. Well, tell me first, just to get to know you a little bit, I'm sure our listeners, you've probably met many of them, but what connects you to Colorado Springs? How long have you lived here and what attracted you to get into this work?
I moved to Colorado Springs in 1986. I actually moved here from Oklahoma with an oil company who then sold and moved back to Oklahoma. And I thought, well, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stay in Colorado Springs. It was a beautiful place to live and still is a beautiful place to live, which is why maybe we have so many folks who want to be here and who are moving here. Mm-hmm. That does affect our economy and our housing.
Yes.
It's a lovely place to live. I've raised three daughters here. I live close to downtown and just enjoy everything that Colorado Springs has to offer, as we all do.
Mm-hmm. It is a great place to live. I've raised my two daughters here, and I'm hoping that they want to stay or they want to come back someday because I think as Colorado Springs grows, while it brings challenges, it's also brought some new elements that I'm really enjoying in our community.
I agree.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the history of Partners in Housing. And I know I read the mission statement, but what do you do in the community?
So Partners in Housing started in 1991. We were spun off from a program of Catholic Charities. And Catholic Charities and the bishop at the time, Bishop Panafin, really wanted to support families in Colorado Springs who were experiencing homelessness. There didn't seem to be an agency at that time that was really focused on that. And so that has always been the goal of Partners in Housing. And we've changed our mission statement over the years, but our main focus has always been working with families who are experiencing homelessness. Things have changed over those 30 plus years. Our program has changed. We've morphed with what our clients need. Our clients' needs change. Mm-hmm. As those years go by. And you know, back in early days, a family would come into Partners in Housing and they had a good chance of coming out of there with this, what they called Section 8 vouchers at the time. That's no longer a realistic expectation. So we've had to really change how we work with families, mm-hmm. and what their goals are, and our services to help them reach those goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I see that overlap with what the services of Homeward Pikes Peak has done, but also with my other roles in the community, especially when I was at the Women's Resource Agency years ago. You know, women who are trying to be single parents or rebound from a changed relationship or family composition, it has been harder and harder for them to afford living independently because of the cost of living that's increased.
Right. So our, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but one of the things that I think is unique to Colorado Springs is that we weren't increasing our housing inventory for a long time. True. And we also were not increasing the wages that people earned in Colorado Springs. And so what we see with families in our program is that they were trying to survive on so little income while everything else around them was just taking off.
I agree. Yeah. And even most recently with inflation, that's affected cost of living, cost of food, cost of gas, all of those things. When you are living paycheck to paycheck, you just can't weather those increases like other families can.
Right.
Yeah. So at Partners in Housing, a person, a family can receive transitional housing or housing supports for a year or two and receive case management and some workshops. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. So we actually, unfortunately, have to have a wait list. Mm-hmm. We don't have enough housing to support the applications. We received the most applications in our history last year, over 1,072 households.
Wow.
With almost 4,000 people in those households. So we don't have enough units to help all those. So our program actually starts at the time a family's accepted. So while they're on the wait list, they can begin working with us and receiving services if they want to go ahead, if they're capable and in a place where they have the, they can manage while they're not housed to be able to start working on those things. And sometimes they can and sometimes they can't.
Mm-hmm.
But they can go ahead and start working with our employment team. They can start working with our budgeting team, making sure that they've got the benefits that they're eligible for. They also can receive some food and some items that we can help with, diapers and that kind of thing, while they're on our wait list.
Mm-hmm.
And then generally, a family's in our program for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
There are no strict deadlines that are attached to that, but that's our focus is about a year. If they're at the end of that time and they're about to get a job, they can stay a little longer until they've got that set up. If they're about to end an training program, they can stay until that's done. So there's flexibility within that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we expand beyond that year after people leave our housing into what we call our long-term services. And so they're still able to come back and continue budgeting or come back and get more resources or come back and talk to our employment team about how to get a promotion within the job that we help them get. And so we really expand beyond that year.
Mm-hmm.
So that we help families holistically. We have families that, about 80% of our families have fled domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
So either immediately before coming to us or leading up to that time. We have so many children in the program, as you can imagine, in these households, that we really have services for them too. So looking at the ACEs that they've been through, the trauma that they've been through, and making sure that we're providing positive experiences so that they can recover from all the things mm-hmm. that led to this crisis that this family found themselves in.
Yeah. I think that's been really helpful for our clients because we at Homeward Pikes Peak really address the addictions and their mm-hmm. sobriety. And then we help them stabilize so that they can apply to be in a program that's looking at that next level on this self-sufficiency staircase that they are on, trying to work and to move forward with their life goals.
Right. It takes all of us, Beth.
It does.
And Homeward Pikes Peak and Partners in Housing are just two of the agencies that mm-hmm. help support families. Family homelessness is really complex.
Yes.
It's not as simple as addictions mm-hmm. or, and not that that's simple, but there's not one explanation for why a family becomes in mm-hmm. that housing crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So I think having all these teams in Colorado Springs that work together mm-hmm. to support families yeah. is super important.
Mm-hmm. And that definitely leads to the Family Solutions Collaborative, which you helped create a couple of years ago, because there wasn't an entity that was bringing all of these partners together to strategize on a case-by-case basis, or even look at the systems that are engaged with families and how do we advocate and create different programs.
Right. So the Family Solutions Collaborative really started in about October of 2019. And then we all know what happened in March of 2020, which even though we had the greatest intentions, everybody's services had to change and mm-hmm. adjust to meet those crisis needs due to the pandemic. But the Family Solutions Collaborative is really strong again now, bringing together about 16 agencies in town who support families and children. Mm-hmm. So those can be childcare agencies who see families as they begin to be in crisis. That can be all the way through the spectrum of assistance with resources and housing and all the things that lead a family to being stable mm-hmm. and hopefully thriving in our community. Everybody deserves a place to live. Mm-hmm. Everybody deserves peace with financial matters. And we really, as a group, the collaborative really works to bring those providers together to make sure we're on the same page. Mm-hmm. One of our goals, as you know, Beth, is that a family doesn't have to tell their story a dozen times before they find the right place for help. And so really relieving them of that trauma, of that repetition of mm-hmm. all the things and all the questions that have to be asked to send them to the right place in the first place. And so that they can just find the services they need and the help they need without having to go through that over and over again.
That is so important. That re-traumatization that happens when you have to fill out an application form, be interviewed by a caseworker to see if you're eligible for services, and then maybe be told no and have to start over. Mm-hmm. That can be horrible for a head of household or, you know, any member of the household.
Yeah. So we've seen great cooperation, great collaboration. And I think Colorado Springs is known for its collaborative efforts on working together. We aren't jealous of each other. We don't own these families. There are so many families in need. There's mm-hmm. plenty of families for everyone to help in their own way mm-hmm. and really to prioritize and what they're good at. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things that I'm really proud about Partners in Housing is that in our over 30 years of existence, we've had many board members come and go, but our board has stayed focused on our mission. Mm-hmm. We don't chase dollars we don't change our program to chase dollars. We really do learn what's best for our clients by listening to them. We constantly are asking them. We have an advisory board of past clients who inform us on what worked and what we could change. So we're always steady with that mm-hmm. and making sure that we're doing what we set out to do.
Yeah. Well, it's evident. So thank you for the strong work of Partners in Housing. And Homeward Pikes Peak has kind of recently become a collaboration partner with the Family Solutions Collaborative as we've increased our services mm-hmm. to serve families. And the Commons probably being the most notable place where we have 25 out of our 50 apartments are designed to serve families exiting homelessness.
Right. Yeah. On a different metric, right? On mm-hmm. a different way of serving those families that are in a different place in their lives than what Partners in Housing can help. Mm-hmm. And so it's just really important that the community has that breadth of services mm-hmm. that really are tailored to families in their circumstance.
Yeah. Can you name some of the other groups that are part of the Family Solutions Collaborative?
Well, first I'll name Catholic Charities. Mm-hmm. Andy Barton and I are the two that really started this idea and have stuck with it this whole time. So Catholic Charities is a wonderful resource for families.
Yes.
Family Life Services, Dream Center's Mary's Home mm-hmm. are really involved in the collaborative. CASA's there, TESA's there, mm-hmm. CPCD, Salvation Army, mm-hmm. I didn't bring my list.
Yeah, that's okay. That's a great example of the strong organizations that are part of this. And it really shows that it goes from emergency services to transitional housing to longer term housing. And we all have a different role to play, whether you are a food pantry or you connect to childcare. All of these are elements that are critical. And it reminds me that, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, mm-hmm. housing is on the base level. We have to provide stable housing so that people can be ready and prepared to do the next step, which may be going to the doctor or applying for a job and then given some guidance along the way.
Right. Exactly right. And our families come in and work with a caseworker on their goals. They're not our goals for that family. They're their goals. But they always include those similar factors, right? Mm-hmm. The financial literacy, the employment, the transportation, the childcare, all those things that medical and mental health, mm-hmm. physical and mental health, all those things that take are needed for a family to really be healthy and strong.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Well, let's pivot a little bit to the gap of housing mm-hmm. and what that has meant for the clients we serve, but to the broader community. You know, there is a housing crisis for affordable and attainable housing, and it's also difficult for people of middle and higher incomes to find housing. So, like you said earlier, this community has not kept pace with construction for housing across the economic continuum.
Right. So we weren't increasing our inventory for quite a few years there. And at the same time, the wages in Colorado Springs remained low. And there's a lot of theories about why that happened. They are starting to get better. We are mm-hmm. seeing higher paying jobs with career focus, with benefits and all the things that families need to survive. So one of the things that I've been involved in is called the Affordable Housing Collaborative. And we started that in 2018, and that was B.J. Scott, David Lord, Lee Patke, Randy Scott, and myself. We called ourselves the OG5, and our first commitment was that we weren't going to quit. There had been other committees that had formed and had started work and then gotten distracted, or the life's emergencies affected them. But we were just determined to keep at it. And our first goal really was to educate the community on what affordable housing is. Mm-hmm. And one of the terms that I really like that I stole from somebody, and I'm not sure who, is there's capital A affordable housing and there's small A affordable housing. So capital A affordable housing are projects that have to be used to serve people at certain area median income levels. So they've got financing that mandates that. They've got land use restrictions that mandate that, that they will, for the life of that property, they will be used to help people at certain median area mm-hmm. median income levels. Then there's small A affordable housing, which is just housing that's more affordable. Mm-hmm. And they tend to be older properties, lower maintained properties that are just charging less rent. Those have disappeared.
They have.
So the small A affordable housing a lot of out-of-state investors came in and bought those and raised the rents. And so there's not a lot of that that's in the community anymore. So we've got to continue to build the inventory of projects that are mandated to serve people at various incomes so that we do have that covered in our community. So recently, the Affordable Housing Collaborative has morphed into the Pikes Peak Housing Network, which combined another group that was in town that was really looking at those middle income folks. So what they call the missing middle. Mm-hmm. So those are folks that tend to be 80% area median income and up to 150 or so, which that housing has disappeared as well. Mm-hmm. And so when people that are at lower income can't move into middle income housing, it doesn't open up the lower income housing. So there's this whole circle of progress that needs to be made among all areas of housing.
Yes.
And so those two groups have joined together to become the Pikes Peak Housing Network to really look at overarching problems with our housing inventory. So that group also includes the Home Builders Association, it includes the Chamber of Commerce. So looking at the economic issues of the Springs that affects who can move here, mm-hmm. what jobs can come here. You know, when an employer is looking at moving to Colorado Springs and they say, we can't pay our employees enough to live there, we need to pick somewhere else. That's not
That's a
compliment.
Problem.
It's yeah. not a compliment to us. Mm-mm. It doesn't help us it grow in the right way.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a really good place right now with that Pikes Peak Housing Network looking at overall what Colorado Springs needs to mm-hmm. develop more housing.
I agree. And it's rental housing and it's single family homes.
It is.
It's the whole continuum of housing that we need to address. I think the city of Colorado Springs had a report out last year and it said that we need approximately 20,000 units of housing across the continuum to meet today's need. And it needs to be more housing to meet the demographic projections
right.
that we have.
It's hard to tie down that number.
It is.
I've heard even just in the last couple of weeks, various numbers that are tossed around about how many housing units we need. I think we need to remind ourselves that we can't necessarily build ourselves out of this crisis.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of housing to build.
Yes.
And fast enough to make it, because then other housing's aging out as we're building, if it takes us mm-hmm. 10 to 20 years to build that much housing. And so we really have to support the idea of higher wages, better employment, mm-hmm. so that families and individuals can't afford to live here as housing comes online and as we're developing more housing.
Yeah, I agree. And there's been some creative ideas such as intergenerational housing. Mm-hmm. I heard of a program called SunShare where they wanted to have people who were aging in place open up their homes and maybe rent a basement mm-hmm. or a bedroom to someone else who has an entry-level job, and they would pay kind of a rental fee and maybe help that elder mm-hmm. age in place longer. And then there's the idea that has been thrown around of increasing accessory dwelling units, mm-hmm. which is like the mother-in-law apartment over the garage or something like that, but just to increase some density.
Right.
So, and then there's the traditional, let's just build a new apartment building or let's build some condos.
Right.
And all things are being looked at, if I understand.
Yes. And I think we do have to be creative. We have to look at what communities have done that worked for them mm-hmm. and emulate that where it worked. You know, when I was a child, we lived in a trailer home. Mm-hmm. That was a starter home for families. And how do we make sure that there are starter homes, whether mm-hmm. it's that or not, mm-hmm. But making sure that there's all the options that we can, right? So Beth and I have both been involved in a tax credit project, which it's a great way to build affordable housing. It's very expensive.
Yes.
And I think there are certain projects that are best for tax credit and some that aren't. And so Colorado luckily has passed Proposition 123, which is going to release a whole lot more money every year for affordable housing that won't have all those hoops to jump through that a tax credit project has to do. I think that's really amazing for our community. I'm really proud to say that Colorado Springs has already checked all the boxes and is eligible for Prop 123 money. So I think we're going to see some changes on how smaller projects can be built less costly, more mm-hmm. creatively than having to use all the tax credit obligations and
yeah.
priorities.
The low-income housing tax credit is a very complicated, and it takes a long time to plan, to apply, and win. And as you said, when you're using that method of the financing structure, it adds expense.
It does.
So the 50-unit apartment building that we just completed was around $17.5 million to create 50 apartments. And you know, the average construction for a 50-unit building would probably be 25% less mm-hmm. if you didn't have to use the tax credit model, because there's so much oversight and regulation when you're using a federal funding mechanism.
Right. But it allows you and it'll allow us on a project we're working on to keep those rents really low mm-hmm. and to keep your permanent debt really low.
Yes.
And so versus somebody who comes in who's building a market rate apartment building, they can afford to pay a lot larger debt mm-hmm. every month than somebody who's only charging the maximum rents that are allowed for really folks that are really low income.
Yeah, our maximum rent at the Common for a one-bedroom apartment is less than $600.
Yeah, right. And nobody else could do that.
Right. Right. And the market rate, one-bedroom apartment in the community is now, I think, $1,400. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge difference. And I think that's the problem that when we are helping people exit our transitional housing programs, there just are not enough older apartment buildings that they can rent at around $1,000 to $1,100 a month. And that's really unfortunate.
Right. So I'm back to Partners in Housing for a minute. We did have 92% of our households who exited our program last year moved to stable housing.
Great.
But that's because of the income increases that we were able to get them. Mm-hmm. And so really looking at their employment, making sure they've got all the benefits, making sure that they're getting some child support, all those kind of things so that they can rent in the community, mm-hmm. Whether that's in an affordable project or on the market. But we've had great success lately with raising their income enough that they can afford to live here. And so we're really proud of the work that they've done to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
93% of our households last year were single moms. And that ranges, Beth, from a young teenager who's pregnant, who's never lived on her own, and I'm talking 18 or 19, to somebody who's had a home, who has a master's degree, who all these circumstances have affected their ability to stay housed. So that wide spectrum is interesting and challenging for mm-hmm. us and for our staff. My amazing staff mm-hmm. That work with those families to make sure that they don't lose sight of the fact that they can be thriving mm-hmm. and work towards that.
Yeah. And that's really our goal for all members of our community.
It is.
And that's why the work of the Pikes Peak Housing Network is important, because we need to be having supports and housing available to people who are earning $30,000 a mm-hmm. year and $80,000 mm-hmm. a year, because both are going to have stressors when they're looking for the next place to live. They like are. You mentioned, we have to have openings of housing units across the spectrum so that there's flow for people to move. And I think it was just yesterday, I was listening to the radio and they said the average home price in Colorado Springs is $370,000 for a single family home. And that in Denver, it is over $600,000 for a single family home. That's just not accessible to a new professional.
It's not. And interest rates, of course, are up too. And so those mortgage payments really look daunting to young professionals, young first-time home buyers to try to get that and do their income building, their asset building, right, through home ownership.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's an interesting point, because I was talking with a donor recently who just said, Beth, how can we help your clients become first-time home buyers? And I said, there's a lot of steps in between helping someone exit homelessness to become a first-time home buyer. There's a lot of asset building. There's a lot of financial literacy that needs to happen for that household to be ready for the I don't know if burden is the right word, but the responsibility of owning a home.
Right. And knowledge on all those things. You know, when you live in an apartment, somebody will come and fix your sink when it's leaking. When you live in a home, you look at it and say, oh boy, who do I call? There is a lot to learn about owning a home. We track our clients, our partners, we call our clients partners, for 5 years after they leave our program. And we have had 22 of those households buy homes.
That's great.
In the community during that time. So they got there, but it wasn't the first step.
Mm-hmm.
So it does take a lot of planning.
Yeah. So what do you think next for the Pikes Peak Housing Network? I saw that they have found a home at the Chamber and EDC, so that they are going to be organized and have that backbone support.
Right. The Chamber will be their fiscal sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to a similar agency in Fort Collins. The Chamber is that fiscal sponsor for them as well. They're looking for an executive director to help them move to their next set of goals.
Mm-hmm.
They will be working closely with the city and Steve Posey in his new role on advocacy in front of city council or county commissioners, any kind of tracking that they can help the city with on trends in housing. And so they've got a lot of work to do coming up. I'm really pleased with how they're functioning again now. So
that's great. Yeah. I was optimistic when I heard the news that they were going to be housed inside the Chamber and EDC, because I think that really elevates this conversation that the housing crisis isn't just around homelessness. It's for all socioeconomic levels.
It really is.
This issue affects the young professionals. It also affects the retiree and that middle income worker who wants to move from apartment living to home ownership, and if there's not the inventory there, they can't make that move.
No, I think it's a great spot for them too.
That's great. Well, is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you think is relevant to this
conversation? Well, I will mention that Partners in Housing, along with Grecio Housing and Rocky Mount Community Land Trust, are about to break ground on a project that we've been working on for years. It took us that long to get to this point. It is a low-income housing tax credit project called Bentley Commons. There are 24 apartments there now, and we're adding another 168.
That's a lot.
So it'll be a large project. As I said, we've held this land for quite a while, planning for this, making sure it was the right time and making sure that we were ready to take all that on.
Mm-hmm.
So we're super excited about that.
That's great.
It'll take 18 months to build once we break ground. And so it's a ways out, but at least it's a step.
Yeah.
And that project will serve folks that are 30% AMI up to 60.
Mm-hmm.
So really low income households will be housed there with those attainable rents and affordable rents.
That's great. Do you think it'll be open in 2025?
We do. Late spring, early summer of 2025.
That's great. Well, and that is another reminder to our audience of how long it takes projects to be planned and then to have construction and them to be open, which is one of the reasons why that addressing this issue is not a fast fix.
It's not a quick thing. We have to think further out. If we'd have been thinking out, you can always hindsight, right? If we'd have been planning for this 10 years ago, we might not be quite in this crisis, but we're doing it now and we're making great strides now.
That's great. Well, what could any of our listeners do to support the housing crisis in our community?
I think they can support our local agencies, including Homer Pikes Peaks and Partners in Housing, Partners in Housing is not a government agency. Some people see our name and think, well, they might be like a housing authority. We're not. We're funded by grants and contributions. We need local support. Go to the Pikes Peak Housing Network website, and you can see what their newsletter and what they're working on. They'll be putting out information on when we need advocates in front of different groups. Any groups that you might want training, they are happy to do that. So I think anywhere that you look, you can Google around and find ways to help.
Great. And I add that we need citizens and community members and neighbors to support the creation of housing in their neighborhood.
Yes.
You know, there is still a presence of NIMBY in most cities in America, and it is alive in Colorado Springs. And the construction of new housing, whether it's apartments or townhomes or single-family homes, it's critical for your neighbors, for your children, for the people who work in your dentist's office and, you know, who are serving you a latte. So we really need housing at all levels. So please support the creation of more housing in our community.
Right. I agree.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining Elevating Pikes Peak Women today. It's a pleasure to talk to you. We've been working together for a long time in this community. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Beth.
Thanks for listening to Elevating Pikes Peak Women. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if so, please consider leaving a review wherever you listen to podcasts or share with your friends on social media or in person. For more information, check out our show notes. If you're interested in learning more about Pikes Peak Women, visit us on Facebook. Until our next episode, I'm your host, Mary Lou Makepeace.